welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Take two. Welcome to another episode of Turn the Page podcast, Syosset Public Library's podcast. This is one of your librarian hosts, Stacey Mencher, and I am here with our very lovely guest.
Hi, my name is Nabil Ayers. I have a new memoir out called My Life in the Sunshine, and we're here to talk about it.
Yes, I'm so okay. I will full disclosure, I didn't finish the book. I do have it.
Wow.
And Me too. Don't worry. Yeah, twinsies. No one's also going to be seeing the video. I should let you know.
Right.
The audio on our podcast.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. But I mean, yeah, it's good that you don't know the ending because now you can't give it away.
Yeah, no spoilers here. I was reading it and I really liked it, but I've been stumbling in my research for talking to you. I was like, what? There's an audiobook and you narrate it? We're going to pause reading. I'm going to get an audiobook.
Oh, of course. Right.
So
right.
I'm very excited. That's the only reason I didn't finish the book.
Don't worry about it.
Guess what? You could read it. You could listen to it.
I know. I'm surprised I've had so many people ask if there's going to be an audiobook. I didn't realize how many people I know listen to audiobooks. Yeah.
They're so good. I'm a reader. I work in libraries. If that's not clear enough for people, but I really got into audiobooks and to the point of like, I now primarily do my reading through audio.
Yeah.
So I love it. And I love that you narrate it.
It was fun to do. I was surprised when they asked me to do it, although I guess that's common with memoirs to have. It's less common with nonfiction it's more common with nonfiction, less common with novels. But it was really fun. It took a lot of time. It was five separate 4-hour sessions. So they weren't that long because I think they don't want you to talk for 10 hours straight or whatever. Yeah. But it was really a slow, long process, but also kind of fun.
I'm excited to listen to it.
Yeah.
So what inspired this book and for you to write it now?
Wow, that's a good question. I mean, the very short version of the story, and I suppose the inspiration, is that I've never known my father. He's a pretty famous jazz musician named Roy Ayers. I'm very close with my mother. And when my mother was 20, she met Roy and said to herself, "This is going to be the father of my child. I want to have a kid with him. He doesn't need to be part of our lives." The goal was for her to be a young single mother. That's what she wanted, which is interesting and unusual, but this is the story I've always known. She's always told me this. So they were dating at best, not really. They, you know, hung out a few times and she said that to him. She said, "I want to have your child and you don't have to be part of our lives." And he agreed. And that's always been the story. So I grew up with my mother, but my father's well known. So I always heard his music, or we would run into him sometimes. And of course, once I became an adult and started playing music and working in the music business, which I still do, he came up kind of more and more. Now we live in the same city. I know people who know him, but we don't know each other. And it's not divorce. He didn't leave us. It's none of the sort of classic things. So it's just this really interesting, unique situation that as I grew older, I just turned 50 this year, I think I just started writing. Well, I'd never been much of a writer, but I started writing about 5 or 6 years ago, lots of stories about the bands I played in and kind of all the fun things. And my wife said, "Look, that's all fun, but you should write about your father and your race because those are interesting." And so that's what kind of got me started writing short stories, I suppose. And I had enough of those that it sort of spanned decades. And I realized, oh, wow, I wonder if I could make this into a book. So I wasn't trying to write a book, but once I had enough of some of the hardest parts were kind of done. And that's when I decided like, wow, if I could put this together. And it still took another couple of years, but it kind of happened accidentally, but I'm really glad it did.
It's a really interesting story. And I find very timely. I know there's a lot of memoirs or nonfiction about like reconnecting with relatives. And it's a popular topic. A lot of patrons in our library love reading books like that. I remember like when Inheritance by Danny Shapiro came out, that like everyone loved it. And I remember someone's like, "You should read the book." And I was like, I kind of have a similar, not exactly similar life story to that, but I was like, no, with like DNA testing and stuff, like I'm living that. I don't need to read it. But it's true. I have a different story of that. I I was adopted at birth, and mm-hmm. then was like, I've always wanted to know my like nationality, and with Ancestry.com and 23andMe, they always yeah. like advertise, and I was like, I'm gonna do it. So uh-huh. I did, and my husband did it, and it was interesting to get the results. Like, I wasn't expecting anything, but because of that, I then ended up getting connected to birth relatives.
Yeah, like, that's like, huge, right? That's amazing.
Like, yeah, so I was like, I don't need to read it. Let me play out my story, and then I'll read some others. But,
yeah.
No, when the book came across that this was coming out, I was like, oh, this is really interesting because you touch upon what it means to be family, and that I find very relatable, aside from just on a personal level for me.
Right.
But a lot of people often wonder that, and your story I find so unique. Because you grew up like knowing this, like, yeah, no, this is what my family was.
Right. I knew the whole story, but I didn't know. I mean, I think I did 23andMe because I was getting older, and I think I finally realized I know so much about my mother's side of the family. I've known, you know, I knew my great grandparents and my grandparents and tons of cousins, and she's really good at keeping photos and stories. I mean, I know so much about that side and nothing about my father's side. So I think it was just a kind of thirst to learn more. And as I got older, obviously my father, who's older than I am, was getting older. And I think I just started thinking like, there's no reason to not do this soon. It's not going to get easier to find things out. And so I did 23andMe, not with a specific goal, just a goal of learning more. And it just got crazy really fast. I mean, much like you, I connected with a third cousin, someone who was pretty distant, who sent me a family tree from my father's side. And that's where wow. it all came together. And it, you know, went back to, so my father's black and my mother's white. It went back to one enslaved person in Alabama in 1824 and had a story and a picture of every person from him to every generation. It was really crazy. And, but what was more interesting is that it talked about the slaveholder, and it said he was a doctor, and it said his name. And so I started researching that, and that was incredibly easy to figure him out in this very small town in Mississippi, it turns out. And then I found a woman who I believe is related to him. We all have the same last name, and she's alive, and her email address is sitting on this site. So that's when things got crazy yeah. when I emailed her. But it's just been amazing to make these connections and learn all these things.
That's really cool. I could say the most I really did, aside from like finding out I have half siblings and relatives on both sides of my birth family. The most I got with 23andMe is because they tell you your maternal haplogroup. So mm-hmm. I'm in the same maternal haplogroup as Jesse James from the Wild Wild West. Because I was just like, I wanted to kind of learn more, but not because it could be a tricky situation. You don't know if you're going to find something good or find something bad.
Right. Well, there's all the medical stuff too that you can do. Yeah. You can find out if you like asparagus or something. I keep getting
yeah.
those.
I'm always on your team, but it's always interesting to do that. And so while growing up, when I was young, I knew I was adopted. Like my parents told me mm-hmm. young, and I probably did not fully understand it when they told me, but I was just like, yeah, cool. Like at an icebreaker in school, I remember being like, yeah, I'm adopted. And people were like, what?
Right. And I was the opposite at school. People said, oh, are you adopted? And
yeah.
I was like, what?
No,
yeah, exactly.
But it's, to see the 23andMe result, I was just like, okay, cool. Like this kind of follows like what people would guess about me. I mm-hmm. like Northwestern European. But when my husband did it, and he knows like all his family history, my father-in-law loves Jewish geography. So like they do all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband's 23andMe came up as just 100% Ashkenazi Jew. You yep. are nothing else.
That's
yeah. so we joke about that. He's just like, yeah, no, I'm just Jewish,
right? What's fun, so mine was 51% Ashkenazi Jew, which is just a funny number because my mother is definitely Ashkenazi Jewish, but 51% means that
yeah.
so is my father. Has you know,
he got a little bit of that too.
Teeny splash. Yeah.
So what was the most fun thing to write about? What was like what you really enjoyed writing?
Right. I'm trying to think. A lot of it was pretty fun. Some was really hard and, you know, sort of personally challenging and made me have to think about like hard times. But I definitely balanced that with things that I remember as being really fun. I mean, some of the stuff about touring and bands in the 90s and 2000s was really fun to write. I mean, there's so much more that I wrote than is in the book, because it could have just been pages and pages about me driving around the country with my friends playing music every night. And some of those stories are really funny. So like, it's almost to the point where I don't even remember which ones made it and which ones didn't, because I wrote so many more. But I loved writing that, you know, it's just such a weird, unique experience. And it's why I work in music, I think, because I'm not in a band anymore, but I work with lots of people who are. But it's so weird to be in a band, and as much as people think, look, it's just easy, you just go play music every night, it's like the 23 hours that you're not doing that are really weird and crazy and sometimes really hard and sometimes really fun. But like, it takes a lot to get from one city to the next, set up your stuff, wait around, play music, and leave. And you meet so many interesting people along the way, and you base everything you think about a city is on that, you know, 6 hour experience you had that night and the four people you met or who came to the club. And it's just so weird. So I was just got really into thinking about all that and had so much fun remembering whatever, all those crazy things. I mean, my band went to jail in the middle of the desert in Utah once, and that was terrifying at the time, but now there's some really funny parts to it. And it was tons of fun to write about it, and, you know, to write about it, not from a jail cell, but from my house on a computer.
Definitely some interesting stories. I have to say, I like reading about like the jazz in the 70s in the city, because that's not something I'm super familiar with.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was such
I'm a music fan. I do tend to listen to like alternative pop punk, emo. Mm-hmm. About my dad was like, you're growing up on the Beatles and Celine Dion, from my mom.
Nice.
But I just to kind of, like, I remember I've been to jazz concerts. I'm not musically talented or inclined. I did clarinet for 2 weeks and then quit. I couldn't read music, and I was like, I'm a kid. No.
Yeah.
So kudos to everyone who could play and learn music. I'm more power to you.
It's weird. Well, I mean, I almost had the same experience, because I was so surrounded by music from an early age, from zero. I mean, from birth. I can't remember music not existing in my life. There's no like, oh, I remember the first time someone played a record. Like, it's just it's like drinking water or whatever. So my uncle is a jazz saxophone player who was always practicing, was always playing. I went to tons of concerts when I was a little kid. The place you mentioned, my uncle lived in a loft on Canal Street in New York, and it was all musicians who lived there, and they practiced all day and they put on concerts at night, and I was at all of those. And I started playing drums at a really young age. My uncle bought me a drum set when I was 2.5. And I have unfortunately no video, but lots of photos and tape recordings of he and I playing together when I'm not quite 4, pretty young. And he's, you know, in his 22 or something like that. And so all of this existed. And then eventually, once I was maybe in grade school, you know, 3rd or 4th grade, I was kind of a self-taught drummer. I was raised around it, and I just started playing drums when I was too young to even have lessons. Taught myself more by just putting on headphones and playing along to Kiss records and Stevie Wonder records and things like that, because that was what you did. And by the time I tried to take lessons, I just couldn't do it. And I still could never do it. I can't. The idea of like reading music or learning technique or form or how to do it is just like, I don't know what you're talking about. You just put on the record and you play with it. That is how you play drums. And so I've never been able to read music. I've always hated practice, even band practice. It's the worst.
Oh, really?
It's terrible. I just want to do the fun parts. It's not very disciplined version of
what works for you. I mean, right. I have, my dad has 2 brothers, an older brother and a younger brother, and both of their kids have some like musical talent. My dad, like, none of them ever like went like joined a band or anything. They just like jamming out usually.
Right.
And this was like in the 70s, 80s. My dad to this day will still try to learn guitar, but he loves playing with like bongos. We used to have that in the house growing up. He did that, but his brother, musically talented, one of my cousins plays trumpet. I say that questionably because they live across the country, California, and they are younger than me by at least a decade. So I'm not as familiar.
Right.
I have 2 cousins. But one of my other cousins, all 4 of my uncles, my dad's younger brother's kids, are all musically talented, either sing really well or at least Three of them play instruments. One of them is a drummer himself and is in a band here on Long Island. But I was just like, Dad, how does it feel that like none of your kids, because I have a sister, are musically inclined or could do any of that?
That's wild. This is, I mean, to take it back to me, is funny. When I finally, I mean, I have a few different half siblings on my father's side who I'd never met. And I finally met one of them. And I talk about this in the book, but he has never played music. And he was telling me that these are the kids that have actually grown up with my father. And they're 2 and 4 years younger than me, I think. And neither of them play music. And that really blew my mind, because I always assumed, even though I never knew my father, he's an incredible musician. And I thought, of course, some of that came down through DNA, the fact that I love music and I've always played music. But then I thought about the fact that my mother and my uncle, my mother's a dancer, my uncle's a musician, and those are the people that literally, you know, that bought me records, that took me to concerts, that paid for tickets, that bought me a drum set, that exposed me to music constantly, all the time. So it's the nature versus nurture thing. And I'll never know the answer. And maybe it's just a combination of both and it was inevitable, but it's I was just so surprised that his other kids don't play music, and that's what really made me think, huh, weird, maybe none of this is from him then, or maybe I just got a different gene, who knows.
You know, it is that question of nature versus nurture, because like I mean, I do it to joke with my dad to be obnoxious. I mean, my sister is biologically his, but like she didn't really care. I mean, she goes to concerts, enjoys music, but I was like, yeah, none of us really. I think I tried learning piano from one of my cousins who plays. And I was just like, no, it's not clicking. I love you. Thank you for teaching me for like 5 minutes. But like, not going to happen.
Yeah. Practice isn't fun.
So when you were writing this, was it like you like wrote with a pen? Did you type it all up?
All typed. Yeah. A lot of weekends and a lot of early mornings. Those are my times. A lot of flights. I travel a lot for work, and that I could really, really crank on a flight, especially if it didn't have Wi-Fi or if I didn't buy the Wi-Fi. So I really felt like there's no email, there's nothing, there's no distractions. I have, you know, 5 hours to just do this. That was really fun. But yeah, all computer. I wrote a lot though. I kind of mapped things out on paper while I was typing. I always had a pad next to me where I would write like, okay, this section is going to look like, you know, A, B, C, whatever, some kind of outline or just quick ideas. I always have to have that next to the computer. So it's kind of a combination, but the actual writing was all, I think there were a couple times weirdly where I dictated something, but that was more like, I have an idea. Don't lose this. And I can't type fast enough. And just like started talking to the phone.
That's really cool. Because most people either type or like a handful of people, like authors, like physically write out.
Wow.
I hope you have like a good hand massage therapist.
Yeah.
But it's always interesting to find out like the writing process of authors when talking to them. So you said like on the plane and whatnot, no distractions. So you don't even like listen to music or anything when you write?
Oh, not always music. To me, that's not a distraction. That's a helper. Lots of music, but usually pretty like steady music, a lot of instrumental music, nothing that's going to like remind me that I'm listening to music. It's almost like a weird replacement for silence, because that's even more distracting to me.
I feel you on this. Depending on a task of what I'm doing, I'll sometimes listen to music at work. Lucky enough when I'm not dealing with someone in the public at the library of helping them. If I'm just at my computer, I could pop on headphones. And I could sometimes listen to stuff, but usually I'm like, it either has to be classical where there's no talking for me to get distracted by
listening.
Or for some reason, I'm very productive when listening to like Skrillex.
Oh, interesting.
The whole thing. Because I'm just like, I'll just like listen to the beat and I'm just like, we're doing it.
Yeah, whatever works. I mean, I think what I realized is that it wasn't so much about the style of music for me, but I could only listen to things that I knew well, because then I wouldn't be distracted. I've tried, I think, like listening, I'm going to write today. And I also, you know, I work in music, just got the new album from so-and-so, so I'll put that on. And that wouldn't work at all, because I'd be paying attention to the music and feel, interesting, or this is a cool song. And that's not what I was looking for at the time. So it has to be familiar. so that I can just forget about it.
Makes sense. I get that.
Yeah.
So you talk about, because your book talks about, aside from DNA and family, you do talk about race in the book.
Yeah. I mean, it's that's an interesting thing to go back and look at, because I turned 50 this year and my father's Black, my mother's white, as I mentioned, and I have a Middle Eastern name that kind of, I think the combination of those things has always confused people. And no matter where I've lived throughout my life, I can, you know, first, a lot of people just say like, where are you from? They still say that as recently as yesterday. And I love to just like play the game and I'll just say, I'm from New York. Where are you from? And they're like, no, but like, where are you from? Like, you know, where are you from? Where's your family from?
Yeah.
I'm like, New York, actually. Where's your family from? It's like, I'll just take it as far as I feel like until they ask the question that they actually mean to ask.
Yeah.
So it's always been a thing. But I think I've definitely been lucky. My mother was really good to always raise me in very sort of safe, supportive places. So we lived in New York City and Amherst, Massachusetts, which was incredible, and where I didn't stand out at all as a biracial, you know, poor welfare kid of a young single mother. That was totally, totally common where we lived. And it was this really supportive community and everyone took care of each other. It was great. So when we moved to Salt Lake City for my mom's job when I was 10, that was definitely different. And that was like, okay, well, maybe I do stand out here. But I think I was lucky enough to have like built up a lot of confidence in the first 10 years to where I wasn't used to being the weird kid. And I think I kind of felt like, well, I'm not going to start now. Like, I know that it can be fine and I can make friends. And I did. And it was great. And Salt Lake was a really nice place and also really accepting and cool. And so I feel like I've been really lucky that I've never had like a huge, horrible racial incident that I know of. But I've also, and I learned a lot of this through writing the book, how much I kind of have thought about it and protected myself and maybe in some cases prevented that from happening. And like, I mean, there's a section where I talk about being in high school and going to dances like proms and things with my dates, who are always white girls in Salt Lake, because that's what there are in Salt Lake City. And every time I would ask them, I would be nervous and I would think about that. I'd think like, oh, well, I'm half Black. I wonder how this is going to go down. And it was always fine. They always said yes, but no moment was ever more stressful than like walking up to their front door and wondering what might happen when they opened, when their parents were there, when their little brother was there, if someone was going to look at me and be like, I don't know, maybe you shouldn't go, or let's just say she's sick, or, you know, I always thought about that every time. Nothing ever happened, but even the fact that I spent so much energy sort of preparing for that is an interesting thing that I never thought about at the time. I mean, of course, I thought about it in the moment, but then I forgot about it when it was fine. But to look back decades later and think, wow, well, that happened 20 separate times in those 4 years. And that's kind of a lot for a 13 to 17 year old to have to think about every couple of months, if not more. Like there's lots of that throughout the book and in my life, of sort of like microaggressions and things about my name and people. I used to have an afro when I was a kid. I wish I still did. People asking to touch it. Tons of stuff like that I just let roll over me. And I think that allowed me to more easily get through day to day, but I never really sat back and looked at until now.
You bring up like the point of like how you didn't grow up until like you were more like aware of things music when you were 10 and getting that. I find it so interesting because I feel like you always hear stories, whether it's like in social media news or something, or you're reading someone's memoir, where it's like either nothing happened, everything could have been picture perfect.
Right.
Or it was such a horrible life experience that you're like, how? And I find it refreshing that reading about yours and hearing, listening, talking to you, but like, you know, there were, you know, microaggressions happen like this.
Yeah,
like,
they still do.
Yeah. And there was earlier before I said I thought your book was timely because a lot of things are coming up with DNA testing and finding out about, like,
of course,
relatives and whatnot. But it's also timely of talking with race and what happens. Like, there's a lot more training in today's world. I mean, I've sat through a few, I mean, they were virtual videos because COVID, but like learning about the things that happen in life that you don't realize.
Right. I mean, that's really the whole thing, right? Is you never know what someone else is thinking or what they're going through. And what's weird about that is that I didn't really know what I was thinking or what I was going through. I think it was just a self-preservation thing. I think I was just like trying to get through and doing so successfully, but never stopped and looked at things in a bigger way.
Is there anything that you would tell your younger self after like having grown up and gone through this and writing the book and reflecting on your memory?
Right. That's interesting. I mean, I think I would tell my younger self to relax and not think about it so much and maybe be less careful and let a couple things go wrong and just to see if that had to kind of, I think I was really good at making sure things didn't happen because I established such a hard line for myself that made it harder for something to happen. But I wish that I'd maybe been easier with that line and maybe a couple things would, of course, I don't wish anything really bad would have happened to me, but maybe a couple things would have happened that were enough for me to say, okay, I should be more careful. But instead, I just kind of, I think, went pretty far and just like really protected myself. And I would say relax.
Okay. To bring it back to more lighter topics, I really love that you loved Kiss as a kid. And I'm a fan of Kiss, I have a 2.5-year-old son who.
Have you put him in Kiss makeup yet?
I haven't. That's my plan. Since before I even had him, I told my husband, I was like, we got to like get together a group of us and just do Kiss. Because I haven't decided who I would be yet. I just determined that my husband's going to be.
Right. I mean.
So they have a book. It's Baby Rock and it's Baby Kiss and it teaches you color.
Wow.
So it's like, oh, pink tongue, black and white face makeup. It's very cute.
Red blood coming out of Jean's face.
Yeah. I'd say for a good year, my son's favorite book. So when I read that you had an ice cream cake of Peter Chris's face, first of all, I love it because ice cream cake is like top two for me.
me too.
Seeing that, I was like, oh my god, they could do that. I was like, oh my god, my son would love that, but it would have to be Jean because my son likes doing ping pong and being like,
yeah, you should do it. I mean, Kiss was super important to me. That, I mean, I was raised around all this jazz, and then when I was 5, I got Kiss Destroyer, and it just changed everything. And my mother took me to see them at Madison Square Garden when I was 7, which was really an incredible thing for a 7-year-old to see. I mean, it was mind-blowing, and that's definitely what got me into rock music. But there is also, to bring it back to race, I mean, that's what's interesting, and I talk about this in the book. I mean, being biracial, there are Black artists that I loved, but I didn't totally identify with them, meaning like, well, I don't look totally like them. And of course, there are white artists too that I loved that I didn't look like. And weirdly, Kiss kind of lived in this world where it was so fantasy and it was so ridiculous. I mean, of course, I knew that they were white guys underneath, but like in my head, it was like, well, I could look like that. Anyone can look like that. And so I had my mom put on the makeup and do all this stuff. And, you know, it didn't matter what race I was or what anyone was. It was this weirdly cool moment with them. And I don't think they meant to do that, but they did.
It's cool that could do that and change lives doing that. But from something so minuscule on that, something like, yeah, we're just putting on the face makeup and
right.
Be anybody.
Right. Now there's me talking about it.
But I love this. I was like, oh my God, this is now, I now need to use your book as proof for my husband to be like, all right, we just got to find like one more person to be in our group. And then we can kiss. Because we would play, what was I playing? Like, I Was Made for Loving You.
Good tune.
Where I Want to Rock and Roll All Night, because that's what's in the book. But right. The last page is like Baby Kiss playing a little concert. And it's like, I want to rock and roll all night. And so like, I was like, look, our son likes it. I like it. Come on. We could make it happen.
It's a good photo. It's a good, I think, what, Halloween is, you got 5 months till Halloween.
Yeah, I've got to start planning now. Got to figure out who I'm going to be.
I think you're ace, I think.
Yeah, I'll take it. I was thinking I'd make my son Peter Chris. It'd be easy on him. And he already doesn't like stuff on his face, but I'd force it. It's fine.
Yeah, he won't remember.
Great photo opportunity. So because you were so involved in music, you were in bands, you write stuff, your father's a musician. What do you like about music yourself?
I mean, it just, I love music when it kind of takes me away and makes me not forget about everything, but makes me just focus on the music and can forget about a lot of stuff externally. And that can happen sometimes if I'm like, whatever, working out it can make, you know, no one, I don't actually love to work out. I mean, I kind of like it, but like it's, I listen to music while I'm working out because it partially helps me forget that I'm working out and I'm just thinking about the song that I'm hearing. Like I love the feeling at a concert when I feel like I'm there with a band. Well, we actually are there with a band, but like, you know, that there's not however many hundreds or thousands of people around you, that it's just you and them. That's a really special feeling. Like there's something about finding this sort of specific level of like focus and inclusion that music can bring that I really like. It doesn't always happen. That's, you know, doesn't happen when I'm just listening to music on the subway, but it happens enough. And I'm glad when it still happens as I get older. So that's really what I love about music, because it can do that.
Do you have a favorite music genre?
I mean, I would always kind of say I'm just like a guitar rock guy, which is a pretty wide ranging spectrum. But like, I wonder what, with your taste, have you heard that Turnstile album that came out last year? You mentioned pop punk and all the, I mean,
I'm gonna have to look it up.
That's one of my favorite albums right now. I just saw them last week in Brooklyn. It was great, but they're from Baltimore. I would just call them a rock band, but you know, they come from serious hardcore roots and kind of punk ethos, but just like a really great melodic heavy rock record to me.
Ooh, okay. I will definitely give that a listen, because I do, because my son was young, a lot of my music has been baby centric, which is like a lot right. of Rafi.
Yeah.
Because I grew up on that. So I was like, yeah, we'll do this Baby Beluga. although he is willing to listen to more stuff now. I mean, he'll tell us there's for kids truck tunes that he's obsessed with. So I could tell you fun, like catchy 80s type songs about trucks.
All right. It's a whole genre I'm not familiar with.
But he actually, he started listening to Foo Fighters with my husband, and he's like, daddy's music. Like,
right.
And I'll throw in like random things for him, because I like the 80s, even though I was born on the tail end of it.
Right.
So I make my child listen to Depeche Mode and Tears for Fears.
Oh, I love both bands I saw in high school.
Oh, nice.
I saw Tears for Fears on the BYU campus in Provo, Utah, the Mormon church owned college, which was a crazy thing in eighth grade or something like that. Yeah, it was really great.
Yeah, I saw that they just got back together too.
Yeah,
there's
a new album.
Like, this is great. I mean, we're still in a pandemic, but I know a lot of concerts have been happening again.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, I'm ready to do this.
Yep.
My emo alternative little heart got so excited seeing some of those festivals pop up.
I know there's some crazy ones.
There are. I was like, ooh, like college Stacy back at it.
Yeah.
Since that's like, they were easy concerts to go to when you're in college or high school.
Yeah.
But good time. And so my next question is sort of music related, because I noticed some with your chapter titles. Are they all music based, or
they're not almost all, but not all. And I thought about that towards the end. I was like, well, this is weird. There's I can't remember 44 chapters or something. Let me see. I just got the actual like the hard copy of the book, which is so
nice.
Cool.
It's a beautiful looking book.
Thank you. I'm really happy. I love the artist Rodrigo Carrell did it. Let me see how many chapters there are. There's 40 something, right? There's 39. There's 39 chapters, and it's like, yeah, they're most. A lot of album titles, a lot of song titles, some famous, some super inside jokes for like two people, friends of mine or whatever, but then some that just aren't, and I remember thinking like, okay, there's still time for me to like, if I want to make it a thing, the ones that aren't, it really would not be that difficult to just change three titles to song titles. But for some reason I didn't, it just felt like it doesn't, just because it's mostly a thing doesn't mean it completely has to be a thing. So So they are, yeah. Most of the chapters are a song or an album, but some aren't. And that's the way I like it. But a lot of them have to do with either the time frame or an album I was listening to at the time, or maybe a lyric, but I'm not a huge lyrics person. It's mostly time frame or sort of subject matter.
Very cool. Now, I know a lot of authors have been sort of doing this, although I know it's been more fiction-based authors, where they have like a playlist to like listen along.
Oh,
did
yeah.
Did you ever create one? Have you created one?
I've created many. the official one is on Amazon Music, and it's a 50-song playlist. It's one from each year of my life, starting in 1972, going through to last year. And that was really fun to make, especially just to do it that way. And there's like, not every song, but every maybe three or four songs, there's voiceover and me kind of talking about the songs and how they relate to the book and my life. Yeah, it was really fun. And then I've done some other ones that aren't that long that are more sort of theme based, you know, more Northwest when I lived in Seattle or more, you know, things like that. But yeah, of course, so many musical opportunities. It's That's been really cool. fun.
Is that playlist on Amazon Music available on your website?
It is. Yes.
Okay, listeners, look them up. It's mm-hmm. on there.
I need to make a playlist tab, I think, for all these different playlists.
A lot of people yeah. like that. And by yeah. a lot of people, I mean me.
Right.
But no, I think I'm very excited for your book to come out. It comes out on June 7th.
Yeah.
Am I right about that?
Yep, that's right.
I'm excited too. Somewhere and I was like,
it's a crazy thing. I'm sure you've heard this from many authors, or I don't know if you've talked to them at this exact stage, but this has been so long in the making and it's always felt so far away. And even I would say 2 weeks ago, it still felt far away.
Really?
And now it feels terrifyingly close. And that just happened like overnight.
Yeah, but sometimes some authors will say that, like, it's because sometimes we'll talk to authors that have like contracts, but like they know they have like they have to do like 3 books in like 5 years or something.
Oh,
like
right.
So
right.
They're kind of like, oh yeah, like, but other people, especially when it's like a debut first book, it's just like, you know, it's the time to take it to put it all together and then like have it all be like wrapped in a bow and finish it out.
Yeah, it's a slow, long process, but I learned so much. And I'm glad it took as long as it did. I was complaining some of the time during the process, like, why can't we move faster? But
did the pandemic like heavily affect?
No, this was always the plan. I think the date that's in the contract was that it was to come out February. No, spring 2022 is what it said. And I was told, but February is the beginning of the spring season. So it could be then. So really to have it be June, this is when it was always supposed to come out. It just takes a long time and they know that. So they plan it that way.
I think it's a good summer book. Think it's a good, it could be a good anytime book, but I think it's good for summer because
right.
I feel like it's a book that you could read at the beach, pool, what have you, and like delve into,
right.
you know, a life story and interesting things, because you do throw in like facts about the time,
right?
But I think it's a good book discussion book, because I know a lot of people sometimes look for that for book groups, so
right,
like,
right,
you know, memoirs, mm-hmm. it's discussable, and you I like the aspect that now that you have the playlist that you have
right.
on your website, hey, read and listen.
Exactly.
Library yeah. programming.
And it looks like a summer book, right? It's so
it does, yeah. The cover
it's so yellow.
It is sunshine. But I think it's a great book. I think it's very well written. I'm very
Thank
excited
you.
For the audio. I'll have more to say about that once I finish, like when I listen to it. I'm excited because it's now gonna be my next audio book. Yeah.
Oh great.
Okay. I tend to swap nonfiction and fiction, like I'll try to do like a nonfiction then a fiction, and
right.
I shouldn't say I'm almost done. I'm at like a third left, I think, of this fantasy book I'm listening to, which I uh-huh. like. But I'm trying to be like, okay, I don't want to jump into the next book in the series right away.
Right, right.
I'm reading. So now that I know this is. Oh,
yep. Get ready.
I'm like, I look like I'm plotting something. For,
yeah.
You can't see me. But no, it's very exciting. I actually pulled it up because I was like, what? And I have an Audible account. I will fully admit that, being librarians.
Oh, like, great.
Look, we have Hoopla and Overdrive. And I'm sure we could look into getting it on that. I don't personally do the purchasing for that. But I know if I can't find it or need something right away, I will go to Amazon
right.
and use my Audible credit.
Oh, great. Well, so. I can't wait for you to hear it. It's going to sound a lot like this.
Voice and
thank you.
Exciting to talk to you. And now I can be like, I spoke to him, guys.
I definitely talk more slowly in the audiobook.
You can speed up an audiobook,
right,
and I
mean
that. So
me too.
It was I listened to oh my god, Seth Rogen's mm-hmm. memoir that he came out. And it was weird because I listened to audiobooks on the faster time.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, I can't slow this. And I was like, oh, this is weird hearing it set up in his voice.
Yeah,
we'll still listen to it, but no, that's it's gonna be great. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So are you reading anything now or listening to any audiobooks now that you
just
can recommend to people?
I do this thing where I read like two or three books at a time, which can be really distracting, especially when they're somewhat similar, like these two. These are probably backwards, but I'm reading this woman's work, which is it's a collection of essays by a bunch of different women musicians or women who work in the music business. And a friend of mine, Megan Jasper, who is the president of Sub Pop Records, great record label. She has an essay here. And so I just read hers and I need to get into all the others. And then this one, Shine Bright by Danielle Smith, which is, as it says, a very personal history of Black women in pop. And I'm only a couple chapters in, but it's very much sort of a memoir in her story, but tied to some really incredible historical music stuff.
Sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'd say thank you for coming to talk to us on
the
podcast.
Tons of fun. It's nice to meet you.
And so do you have, if the readers, listeners want to reach out, like, could they reach out to you through social media?
Yeah. It's I'm at Nabil Ayers, NabilAyers on Twitter and Instagram. And I think it's the same handle on everything. And then my website is NabilAyers.com. There's a contact form there. I'm easy to find.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, we're going to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Once again, I'm your librarian host, Stacey, and we're so happy we were able to talk to you and be like super excited.
Me too. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.
Another episode of Turn the Page podcast. I asked the public library. I see, now I messed up.